Hour 10:15 having arrived, I will call the House Tax Committee meeting to order when we have a quorum. We will break in wherever we are and do we have a quorum? Okay, we'll officially call the meeting to order because we do have a quorum. Representative Metza, okay, we can't move the minutes until he's here, so we'll just hold off on that. So review the minutes if you would, members. You see our agenda for the day. Also, I would say there's something you might want to put in your save file. It's the tax staff subject area responsibilities, House Research Department, Joe Michael, Steve Hines, Chris, Pat, Nina, Sean, and then Fiscal, Kathy, and Cynthia. These are your new best friends, so please keep this in your file because you will need them as you want to get bills drafted and things such as that and research as far as how to put it together. So, with that being said, Representative Fisher, if you could please join us, sir, and we're going to hear, I will move House File 77, the Fisher Bill, Minnesota Taxable State Single Exclusion Amount Established. You should have all the information, members, in your file. I do. So I will move that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I see no amendments. Is that correct, Representative Fisher?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And you have the revenue note here in front of you. And so please present your bill, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. The bill I have today is to change the estate tax to bring us closer to federal conformity. It doesn't get us entirely the whole way, but it gets us part of the way there. Part of the reason I didn't ask for everything at this point in time, because I know there's going to be a lot of demand. While we may have a large surplus right now, it doesn't take much for that to be eaten up. And I know there's very many other important issues out there, whether it's addressing the property taxes on credits possible for small businesses, the working family tax credit. You know, these are some other things. So I'll make sure that we're able to try to address some of these other issues out there. And also making sure that as we're going forward, I also know that the agriculture tax credit is also something that's very important. These are things that all cost a lot of money. And so that's why I'm not making the full request right now, but putting a partial request out there. The reason I'm making the request is that over the years, we've not, first of all, I support federal tax conformity as much as possible. We should be working our way there in many different areas, this being one of them. And one of the reasons this really resounded with me is, and I'll admit, I was never, originally I was not a real big supporter of the estate tax. And where it's made more and more sense to me is over the years is many of our small businesses are running into issues that when they have family taking over and trying to continue to pass it on, it's getting harder and harder. And an example I'll use is that in parts of my district, some of the land costs are between $400,000 and $800,000 an acre. And some of the businesses are dealing with land. Another example is some of the small family businesses that are still doing golf courses, which the person I have with me, they used to have a golf course. You know, it does not take much to have, and you're way over the $2 million. And when you've got a smaller business like that and you've got the family taking over, it makes it very difficult for them to pass those kind of things on. So this is one of the things that can help small businesses, not only in the metropolitan area, but when you're out in the farming community, being able to raise that so that it's easier for the family farms to be passed on from one generation to the next. That's an area that I want to make sure that we're addressing as we're going forward. So I can see the need for it. And because of that, and how I saw the small businesses, the small business owners that met with me in my area, they work real hard to make sure that they're paying a living wage to people. And they, as they do these kind of things where they're paying a living wage to people, making sure taking others, there gets to be pressures on their businesses. And this is one of the ways that we can help address that when they're trying to pass things on in the future and continue those good things, because our small businesses are the lifeblood of our communities, and they're ones that are always, they're connected with the local community, and they want to make sure it's doing well. And so those are some of the things that really motivated and helped move me in these areas. And at this point, I'd like to introduce Bruce Mogren. I've got some photos of his family. I know his family going back. We've gone back over the years, way back to high school. And so I'll pass out some photos of their family and allow Mr. Mogren to tell his story.
Sure. Thank you. Fisher, where did you go to high school?
I went to Hillmurray in Maplewood.
I don't know them.
High school hockey. They were very big in high school hockey.
No, I mean, I've heard them, but what are they, like the Spartans or the Cardinals?
Or Pioneers.
Pioneers. Hillmurray Pioneers. Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I will never forget that. Okay. So, members, it's my intention to hear from Mr. Morgan, and then we're going to go and hear House File 18 and 85. Then we'll get into testimony. Then we'll get into questions. Then we'll go to anything the department would like to add on these issues. This is kind of our estate tax issue day here. So, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. I'm Bruce Mulgren, 10116 67th Lane North, Stillwater, Minnesota.
Home of the ponies.
Pardon me? Oh, yeah, home of the ponies. Both my kids went there.
Okay. Okay, please provide your testimony, sir.
Sure. There was 11 of us boys that went to Hill Murray, and I got three of my brothers right up here, so it's so we've been there. But I appreciate the opportunity today to speak on behalf of my family and thousands of other families in the state of Minnesota that are directly affected by this inheritance tax, or let's call it what it is. I call it the death tax because that's when it's triggered. I circulated a copy of the picture of our family. I come from a family of 12 boys, no girls. And people usually, when you make that comment, people say, well, your mom must be a saint. Well, she is now because she passed away about 3 years ago. And Dad passed away in 98. But the one thing that both of them taught us more than anything is character and a good sense of what's right and wrong. We come from a long line of entrepreneurs. Our ancestors came from Sweden, you know, immigrated to Stillwater back in the late 1800s, truck gardeners. My grandpa, grocery store, gas stations. Peter knows.
Yep.
Mom's mom took care of over 250 infants until they were placed in homes. And Dad and my Uncle Bob started Mulgren Brothers Landscaping, or Mulgren Brothers Sod Company, in the mid-50s and made it into a nice little company. The point is, I come from a long line of entrepreneurs, and my own history. Graduated from the University of Minnesota, went on, served in the Air Force, Air National Guard in Minnesota, and then went into real estate. So I've been in 35 years. And the point here is one of I guess a case in point is we'll take a property that our family created, and it's a Carefree Cottages of Maplewood. We had 250 units of senior affordable housing. In order to live there, you can't make over 35, 40,000 a year as a couple. And that was the brainchild of Dad and myself. But Dad saw the need in our community to create this this housing. And it's been very successful. But the point is we've had 15 acres, nothing there. And over a period of 10 years, developed it into 250 units. And the only way that something like that succeeds is to knock down the debt. So, I mean, we're constantly trying to keep our costs down, trying to keep the debt down. And of course, what that does is that creates equity. And equity is one of the things that that's difficult. Like when you had the farm bill, you know, farmers, maybe they had a lot of money on paper, but it's in their land. They can't touch it. And I look at other people that are similar to me, because I said I'd testify for other people too. Like my good buddy Frankie Filon. He owns an excavation company. He started out with a dump truck and a backhoe, built it into now a company that has 200-300 employees. And with that company, you have a lot of equipment, and in order to have a successful company, you've got to get down the cost of that, the expense of that equipment. So as you pay down this stuff, and sometimes it takes decades to do it, you pay it down, you have equity on paper, but you still want to run a business. He's got five kids. He wants his kids to take it over. I know several other entrepreneurs that are providing jobs in the state of Minnesota, and like for instance, I have a friend that's a dentist that they work three weeks a month, you know, to pay for the overhead and their staff. And the last week is where they make their money. So in the long run, the way that you create this equity is to pay down things. And so in other words, what we're talking about is sort of equity here. If you take the problem is that if you take like when NIROP owned Northwest Airlines, they paid it off. But who came in? The corporate raiders came in and they totally abused it without any sort of regard for the people that worked there for anything. And this, you know, I kind of compare this to sort of this bill, because over the years we've paid down our expenses, we've run a really good business, and now we got our debt down, which, as Representative Peter said, now all I want to do is, and my brothers, it's a family business. I have Jeffrey over there is our maintenance guy. Whitey is on the board, and Scotty is our chaplain and entertainment. But it's a very much a family business, and all we want to do is be able to pass it on to the next generation. And so when the state comes in and taxes this years and years of hard work to create this equity, I think regardless of the intentions, it still hurts. And in our particular case, we had an opportunity 3 years ago to make a decision. And that decision was, we had an offer on the table. We either could do that or refinance. We decided to refinance 35 years. And the reason that we didn't do the other part of it is this big corporation came in and said, so, well, we're looking at your books and your salaries are too high. You know, we can, and your rents are too low. I mean, we weren't charging the max. I'm going, well, the salaries are high because we're paying our people a good living wage. I mean, the brothers, the other people that work there, right now, this property has evolved into where we've got assisted living, and we've got 40 to 50 jobs that we directly have provided through our company. And so when the state of Minnesota, I mean, this didn't even hit my radar screen until I was 57. I'm 67 right now. And Peter called me up because Pete and I have served on committees in Maplewood. We became friends. And Peter says, will you support me? In my reelection, I said, let's have a cup of coffee. So we went out and I said, I'd support you, but you're not in favor of my family. And he said, what do you mean? I'm not in favor. I love your family. I said, no. I said, look at this legislation. I never even knew about it until it approached my radar screen. I mean, I'm on the leading edge of the baby boomers at 67. And I started looking at it probably about 10 years ago, and I go, this is not good law. This is not when we refinanced, we can't put a second mortgage against this property. I mean, it's HUD, and so I'm one of the key people because of my brothers and I own it, but I was one of the developers, and so when I pass, I mean, we did the math on this. If it's just the difference between the 1.8 and the 5.49, that's $422,000 that somehow my family has to come up with. And you know what's really objectionable for me is that this is money that this is we created this through hard work and through diligence. I mean, we're taught that we're supposed to be, you know, frugal. We're supposed to do this. And equity, I mean, it just seems like sometimes in the state it's painted, you know, okay, we got this, and all of a sudden we got the business owners. And, you know, we may have a lot of equity, but you can't spend it. I mean, right now, last time I was in here, we talked about it. I'm driving a truck that's got 125,000 miles on it. I mean, we you have it, but for the state to come in, you know, after I pass, and say, and this is what really stinks, is that they come. It's like the mob. You know, you got, okay, you died, you got 9 months, or whatever it is, to come up with the money. Otherwise, we're just going to start taking stuff from you until we get it. And I go, wait a minute, all I want to do is pass this on. I mean, my kids work there. We have We provide all these jobs, all this good housing. We provide housing for 400 to 500 people. You know, all we want to do is pass it on to the next generation to keep it going. And in this law attacks that. And it's not right. It's but putting that to the side, and I'll wrap up here in a minute, but putting that to the side, if you take a look, because I know people say, okay, this is just another guy whining about paying taxes, but if you put that to the side and you go, okay, what exactly is this costing the state of Minnesota? I'm 67. I noticed that you have, even my accountant who's got a small firm, he says he has 5 to 10 people a year leaving the state of Minnesota, you know, because of this tax. Because of this tax, you know, we're pretty much, we're stuck because our stuff is in buildings and in land. And I got tired of complaining. That's why when we talked, I said, okay, if you get tired of complaining, then come on down and do something about it, at least attempt to. But there's lots of people, my contemporaries, that are snowbirds, that are down in Florida, no tax. You know, Arizona, same. Any one of the states around Minnesota, we're a handful. One of a handful that still has this. And I'm going, this is not right. And the problem is this, that there's an insidious erosion of our tax base. People are leaving. People are leaving the state. And so when you look at, somebody asked me last time, well, Mr. Morgan, how are you gonna make up for this $130 million or whatever? I said, how do you know it's $130 million? Take the net. Take the net. What does it cost when people, when these, and part of the worst part of it is that you're driving away the community leaders. I mean, guys like me that are in Rotary, that are doing stuff in the community, that are supporting churches and arts and all these things. I mean, all of a sudden they go talk to their tax people. If you're in a corporation, you got, okay, I got my 401k liquid. Why would I stay? I mean, a lot of people are already spending 4 months in Florida. How tough is it to add a week on either end or a month on either end and a day? I mean, they're going. They're leaving, and it's a brain drain on our state. And that eventually affects everything. It affects jobs. It affects the people that, and I think it's an abuse of power that just because you can, that you tax us. It's we've already paid. We've provided jobs. We've paid our way all along. This is like killing the goose that laid the golden egg. You know, it's just wrong. So I'm sure somebody else a lot smarter than me will figure out, you know, I know there's ways to figure out how many people we're losing. But we are losing people. And like Bob Dylan once wrote, don't take a weatherman and know which way the wind blows. And it doesn't. People are leaving and big numbers. And that's why I think that today, I mean, I'm on the leading edge of the baby boomers. And so you've got this bulge coming through of all people like me, and you know, maybe you can't quantify it, but you know what's happening, and all of a sudden you still have a chance to change things. But why give people an incentive to move out of the state? It's in conclusion, I guess that I just want to say that I love Minnesota. I, it's a passion. I love. I'm proud to be from Minnesota. And there's nothing on the planet that's even better than a fall day or a summer day in northern Minnesota or anywhere in the state. But you can love something and still see the warts and the problems. And that's why I'm here today, because this is a problem. This is a problem, and I hope you can solve it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As we do have a quorum, as I stated, I'm going to mix it up here a little bit out of respect for former Representative Simonson. I think his area still needs to be represented on moving the minutes. So Representative Schultz moves the minutes of January 5th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all favors say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Okay. Questions for the witness, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you certainly did articulate a point that I was concerned about when I look at the bill, Representative Fisher, the Subdivision 11, the recapture tax. Your testifier mentioned the point about 9 months the money is due. The IRS is there at 9 months looking to capture all of what they think they're deserved. And oftentimes it requires when you inherit something, it's not necessarily just a single person that inherits, but oftentimes a family and a multiple number of members. Not all property is unencumbered, mm-hmm. and sometimes it you don't have everybody agreeing after the fact to be able to want to maintain a fee simple interest in property or want to continue owning the property, and so disposing of the equitable interest in those property oftentimes requires selling a property. You don't necessarily have the luxury of being able to divide a building into three parts or five parts. And so when you sell a property, of course, when you inherit it, you get the stepped-up basis and requires paying tax within 3 years. Once somebody dies and it passes the next heir, why do you have a three-year clawback on their capture tax?
Representative Fisher.
And I'll apologize for not understanding the clawback real well on it. What I was doing is taking what we had last time around. And I would say that, you know, if I'm understanding the clawback, it's going back over the last few years for getting the money back. And I apologize. If you could explain the clawback.
Representative Fisher, that's interesting. Let's go to Mr. Michael. We could just to describe that provision.
If we could, that would be.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the recapture tax applies. There's an exemption. There's a general exemption, which in current law is $1.8 million, goes to $2 million next year. If you have qualified farm property or qualified small business property, that general exemption with respect to that property can increase up to $5 million. But to be qualified farm or qualified small business property, the family had to have run the business for 3 years before the decedent died, and a qualified heir has to operate the business or the farm has to be maintained as a farm homestead for 3 years after that. If that requirement that you keep the farm and the family in homestead status is not maintained, that triggers a recapture tax. What all of the bills do today is because they raise the general exemption to $5 million or more, that those special exemptions for small business and farm property become irrelevant because they're essentially the difference between $5 million and the general exemption, and so all of them repeal that, and so that's why those recapture tax provisions go away in each of the bills that you're hearing.
They're not needed. For temporary toss.
Well, yeah, thank you for that clarification. I mean, it is a death tax. It, as the testifier has mentioned, it's property that you've accumulated over time and have used your already tax dollars to acquire and pay for and maintain the debt and service the debt and pay property taxes. The estate tax is just a horrible policy. Thank you.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Morgan, thank you for your testimony. I think you did an excellent job of describing the weaknesses and negative consequences of a death tax, in terms of driving small business owners' residency out of the state, in terms of the consequences to passing the business along and creating debt. And also, I really appreciate the comments that you made, and by the way, Representative Fisher, I do appreciate you bringing this bill forward, about the hard work and the how the estate tax hurts your business when it's time to pass it on. And one of the economic laws I think that we all need to understand is that you know, small business and mid-sized businesses is one of the engines of our economy. And what estate taxes do, or death tax, is it hurts that transfer of wealth. And the result is that people like Mr. Morgan and his family, and by the way, this country was built on people like you.
Thank you. Okay? Thank you.
You know, it's an economic law. The private sector individuals have to accumulate capital and equity, and then they decide to take a risk with no guarantee of getting that money back. And that should be applauded and encouraged by all of us in this legislature.
Let's go through the chair, please. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you. And my point is this. What you do with the death tax is you actually hurt business development in the state, just like his testimony came, and we get less tax revenues. By eliminating this death tax, you'll allow people like the Mr. Morgan and his family to take additional risk, pay their employees better, provide better benefits, and also create new businesses down the road, which will generate more taxes. So the estate tax, what it does, and I don't want to be quite as passionate as Mr. Morgan was, it inhibits the free flow of capital in a market-based and dynamic economy. And when you do that with laws like this, you hurt the risk takers, you hurt the employees, and you hurt future tax revenues in the state of Minnesota. That's an economic law. That's how it works. Okay? Take economics 101. That's why we should not only be in conformity with federal estate tax, we should eliminate the estate tax in the state of Minnesota.
Is that a question?
My question is...
Can you repeat the question?
If I can remember. Yes, my question is, does Representative Fisher agree with everything I just said? No. I'll withdraw the question.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And members, just a couple housekeeping issues here. First of all, tax committee always hears the DFL bill first. This is the first. And they're not bills to hear and kill. They're bills to hear and work very hard on to get signed into law, as we've done in the past. Okay, so with that being said, let's go to Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Morgan, for testifying.
You're welcome.
And for sharing your story and for all the hard work you do in Minnesota. I'm wondering, you know, if do you plan on leaving Minnesota because of the estate tax? I mean, you're still in Minnesota, is that correct?
Mr. Morgan.
You know, it wouldn't matter in my case if I left Minnesota or not because we're one of the ones that are stuck. I mean, I can't take the buildings along to Florida. I can't take them, whatever. But I know a lot of people that have liquid 401ks, liquid things, or that are leaving, that would stay if, in fact, that this wasn't the case. They want to pass their money on to their grandchildren, maybe help them with college educations, maybe. I mean, we could not have done our project, our affordable project, without the help of our parents. I mean, Dad and Mom helped us, and that is what I'd like to see going forward, that and their parents helped them. I mean, it's, like you said, it's a law of economics. You know, it's so I don't plan on it. I plan on staying in Minnesota. I mean, all of us brothers, with one exception, live within 10 miles of our original homestead in Minnesota. I mean, I love it. I have no plans on, I plan on getting out of here in the winter. but other than, no, I don't plan on taking up residency anywhere.
Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's really great to hear that you're going to stay. Thank you for staying in Minnesota. I just want to clarify one thing that I do hear a lot of anecdotes of people leaving from others and from the chamber, but there's no reliable empirical research available to answer the question of whether people leave Minnesota to avoid the estate tax. I would love to see someone do that research. If people leave just because of the estate tax, I think it's probably many reasons. but there's nothing that I can find research that suggests that they're leaving because solely because of the estate tax. So I'm hoping my friend Peter Nelson will, when he testifies, he can maybe shed more light on that. But thank you. Thank you again for testifying.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. I can get you plenty of information of people, actual data, people leaving the state because of the estate tax. So now I would also say that in my real life, I'm a financial planner, and I will guarantee you this. None of my clients are going to pay any estate tax. There are ways around it, things you can do. And I do that every day legally, not loopholes, all legal. But, you know, one area is, for example, life insurance. How are you feeling today? we'll talk. I'll refer you to some folks here.
A lot better than it was.
I would never use this
morning
position to increase my business at all. So, with that being said, Representative Metsa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for getting here a little bit late today. So I didn't catch the beginning, but I did catch a gist of it, and what I couldn't figure out after hearing Mr. Michael's explanation of this was why you wouldn't have qualified under the current law with the $5 million. I, myself, my brothers, same thing. We've got four of us. We have just started the process. My brother Jacob does the best in the family out of us so far financially, and we bought our old family homestead back where my great-great-grandpa settled back in the early turn of the century. So I'm on the complete same wavelength there. My family also inherited a cabin on Lake Vermilion, which I feel very, very fortunate to have in the family. And I'm just kind of confused as to, you know, if it's $5 million, over the $5 million I could see, but what stopped you from being able to work within the current law to be able to pass it on as a business to the next generation?
Well, yes, thank you, Chair Davis. I don't know exactly. All I know is that what my accountant tells me in my financial planner, he said that this would not work for us. You know, so the technicalities, I don't know. I'm a developer, you know, but yeah.
I was just curious as to, you know, why.
And then two other points for this committee for some of you that are new. First of all, it's Mr. Michael, not Michaels. That drives me nuts. Kind of like when people say, how do you spell Greg? Two G's, one G or two. And I say, well, there's two. So they go G-R-E-G-G. It's just so sad. So that makes three, doesn't it? Yeah, but just the way I count. But anyways, and the other issue is, please be careful. I mean, you can say whatever you want to. Obviously, you've all got election service. But please be careful when you use the word loophole. Because if people are acting, and we haven't used that, you know, just a forewarning. If businesses are using current tax law, and then there are some that don't like the tax, so they call it a loophole. Please don't do that. If it is a loophole and they're breaking the law, let's throw them in jail. But otherwise, it's not a loophole. There is no such thing as a loophole.
Good point.
So it doesn't exist. Okay. Representative Applebaum.
I don't have a question anymore.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This estate tax that we have in Minnesota relative to the federal estate tax, I found it instructive in the past, and I retained very little, Mr. Chair, but I'm wondering if Mr. Michael could describe to us the relationship again between the federal estate tax and the state estate tax so I can maybe retain one more increment for next time.
Mr. Michaels? Or excuse me, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is a close relationship between the federal estate and gift tax and the Minnesota estate tax in the sense that the Minnesota estate tax uses the same definition of the taxable estate. So in terms of determining what property, how that property is valued and all of those sorts of rules, those same rules apply at the Minnesota level as they do at the federal level. The federal, the big differences between the two tax systems is that the federal government has a gift tax. So if you, two things. So first, the federal government has a gift tax. So if you transfer your wealth by making lifetime gifts, the federal tax applies, and the rates are unified and so forth. And so, but Minnesota does not have a gift tax, so you can transfer your property during your lifetime and not incur any tax. Now, the consequence of making lifetime gifts is you don't get, as Representative Hertaus was talking about, the stepped-up basis. So, if you have low basis assets, you may end up paying more income tax, and the state will collect income tax on that as well as the federal government. The second big difference is that there's this big disparity in the dollar amounts of the exemptions. The Minnesota exemption starting next year will be $2 million permanently, whereas the federal exemption now is $5,490,000, and that's indexed for inflation. So there's this almost $3.5 million difference between the exemption amounts under the two taxes. So that's sort of the, I think those are the things to think about in the relationship between the two taxes. And like Representative Loon's bill would essentially say the Minnesota state tax will just use whatever the federal, it's actually referred to as an exclusion amount, it's done as a unified credit, but would use that amount as the Minnesota exemption amount.
Thank you. Mr. Michael, Chair Drazkowski.
No, he did. He performed very well, as Mr. Michael always does. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. Further questions for the witness or Representative Fisher? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mogren. We'll see what we can do here.
Chair Davids.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Mogren.
Could I ask one question of this committee?
No. No, you can't. Certainly.
I would like to have somebody explain the reasoning of this estate tax. Somebody, how do you feel as though you have the right to tax this? It seems like it's more of like an excuse than reasons. I don't know. I've had that question. I don't know.
Well, Mr. Mogren, you're going through a chair here that has been accused on the House floor of just wanting to get rid of the estate tax in its entirety.
Mm-hmm.
Guilty as charged. The estate tax to me is an evil tax. Now, I'm not one of those right-wingers that says all taxes are bad. You know, I mean, you need to have an income tax, sales tax, you know, different, and that's what we debate here. But the evil estate tax is evil because you worked your whole life to build something up. You should decide where what you have earned goes, not the state, not the federal government, in my opinion. So some of these, you know, conform with the feds, and the only, you know, I don't like inflators on cigarette tax. I don't like inflators on gas taxes. I love it on the estate tax because the federal is on an inflator, keeps going up as time goes on. So I will be accused of wanting to get rid of the estate tax in its entirety. That's true, just so you know. But as far as reasoning why, you know, over the years, various states have found that as a form of revenue, and Representative Hertaus has a thought on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that the answer to your question is that the state can never have enough of your income.
Mr. Chair?
And the reason I have very, very big concerns about the estate tax in general is you built this up your whole life. You want to go to your kids, your church, your 4-H club, whatever, and then the state and the federal government come in and take it. I work with this every day, and it's so sad that when people have to sell their assets, 250-unit apartment, well, you're probably going to have to sell it. And that's wrong. That's just wrong. I mean, my gosh, we tax you while you're living. Isn't that good enough? Now you're dead and we hit you again. That's just not very Minnesota nice, in my humble opinion. Chair Dabney.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's still early in the year, so I'll take a shot. Sir, it's a matter of whether people should be treated fairly or not. If you and I today both buy 1,000 shares of some company, and over the next 2 years it escalates in price significantly. We've got some really good gains in that purchase. And I'll be nice. 2 years from today, I die. 2 years from today, you sell the stock. You pay capital gains on the increased value of that stock. My heirs pay nothing. I don't think it's fair that you should pay taxes on the increased value of something, and my heirs should not. I think we should be treated the same. we already assess capital gains at a lower rate than we do income taxes. So we pay people to accrue value, often in the case of stocks, with nothing to do with their efforts, and we tax that at a lower rate. I think we should incent work, but that's not the structure of our tax system. So as we increase and increase and increase the threshold for exemption on the estate tax, we create a more and more unfair tax system. So it's early in the year. I thought I'd take my shot.
And, Chair Dabney, I don't like the example of you passing. That would cause me more pain than my heart could bear. So that was a very...
And you have a big heart, Mr. Chair.
A very big heart.
Yes, large. Very big heart. Yeah. Enlarged, yes.
I hope not. Anyway, okay, Chair Daskowski.
Mr. Chair, could you outline for us what have been the impediments to repealing the entire tax in the past?
Well, the impediments are very simply that I don't get big enough numbers to do all the things I want to do. There's a lot of taxes I'd like to hear, the CI tax, all sorts of taxes, but we just haven't had the funds. I like Representative Fisher's bill and the other bills that are here to, take a shot at it. What's the note here? $70 million a year, something like that?
Yep.
So, or 61 in 18, 77, 4 in 19. So, this is something I'd like to take a look at, and we just haven't had the numbers in the past. Even the Don't Stop Believing tax bill that I've stopped believing in didn't really address that. We didn't have the numbers to do it. Chair Draskowski.
Mr. Chair, do we know how much it collects, the entire tax? I should look at the sheets. Thank you.
The McDonald's sheet, yeah. So. Okay, with that, and I always have people that want to testify for with concerns. We need to move on here, and then I will ask the department to come down after we've heard the three bills for their thoughts and comments, if they wish to provide them. So thank you very much,
David,
Mr.
Can I have one last comment?
How many last comments do you have? Mr. Mogren.
This is the only thing. I just want to thank Representative Fisher. Thank you so much for being a friend and for listening, because he actually listened and it takes a lot of courage to do what you did, and I appreciate that. You and Senator Weigert, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mogren, for your testimony. Thank you, Representative Fisher. I will move that we lay House File 77 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Representative Loon moves House File 18. If you could please present your bill.
What's that? Just real brief.
Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, I just a comment to Representative Daphne's comment. I do appreciate that perspective. To me, what Representative Daphne did, he just made an argument for eliminating the capital gains tax, okay? Not for charging it to somebody who's already dead, okay?
We're making progress, but since you used a name, we will refer over to Representative Daphne.
Well, let me just make one more follow-up comment. Again, what the capital gains tax does, it hurts the accumulation of capital for private individuals. When they accumulate that capital, many of them will take risks to grow the economy, create more jobs, hire more people, and actually increase tax revenues. So the capital gains tax should be eliminated, whether you're alive or dead.
No.
Thank you.
No.
Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I won't mention anyone's name, so we can move along. Yes, yes, yes. But I'm not convinced that a guy sitting in his basement in his underwear doing online trading is creating jobs or anything of the sort that other members here have indicated should be protected by elimination of the capital gains tax.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are you sure he didn't mention my
name? No, he did not. Representative Lewin moves House File 18 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. If you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what we're hearing today, I'm going to call the sort of the baby bear, mama bear, and papa bear versions of estate tax reform. Representative Fisher's bill would increase the exclusion a bit. My bill would provide federal conformity with the exclusion, as Mr. Michael had explained previously. That exclusion is $5 million indexed to inflation, so it's 5.49 currently. And that is my proposal in this bill. We've heard this legislation before. I think for all of the reasons that Mr. Mogren described probably better than I could, that this is important to do. You know, just looking at the tax climate in Minnesota, and only 14 states have an estate tax, and please correct me, Mr. Michael, if I'm incorrect on this, but going back to, I think it's the early 2000s, the federal government used to give you a dollar-for-dollar credit on estate taxes charged by your state, and you can just nod if I'm in the right venue here. Thank you. And that went away at the federal level, and when that happened, a lot of states eliminated their estate tax. Minnesota was not one of those states. So, again, we're among 14 states that have an estate tax at all, and we are not aligned with what the federal policy is. So we've talked about conformity at this committee before. It certainly makes it easier when it's filing taxes if we don't have a policy that's separate and apart from how the federal government treats taxable incidences. But aside from that, there was a little discussion about perhaps out-migration of taxpayers, and I suspect some of the witnesses coming forward may talk about that more, so I won't belabor the point. But when we have an estate tax, which only 14 states have, we have the fourth highest income tax with our the new fourth bracket that was added of any state in the nation, the third highest capital gains tax, the fourth highest or third highest corporate income taxes of any state in the nation, all of those things start to add up. And what is an incentive for businesses not to plan their succession for moving to states with a more favorable tax climate? And Mr. Mogren and his family are the type of businesses we want to make sure we're keeping here. We're putting family businesses, in many cases, in a very difficult position of having to probably sell their business and their assets to pay those taxes. And faced with that proposition, a lot of people are going to make plans to move elsewhere. And we're aware there's a lot of wealthy families that establish trusts in states, perhaps nearby Minnesota, to avoid some of these taxes. And the chair certainly is well aware of planning strategies and that can help people avoid the tax. The problem we're going to run up against as more businesses, more people with income and wealth make these plans, for all of the wealth that moves out of our state, it takes a great deal of wealth moving into Minnesota to make up for that loss. And I think the Department of Revenue right now figures that about 28% or so of our income tax revenue comes from people in those very highest tax brackets. So the more people you have that move out, pretty soon you're going to have a real problem with in terms of tax revenues starting to decline and how we replace that revenue. So with that, I'd be happy to stand for any questions, and I know we'll want to get to testifiers who will talk about all of these proposals.
Questions for members. Chair Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably a question for Mr. Michael, but if we pass this bill and then all of a sudden the federal government changes theirs to be lower, what happens to the state? Do we follow suit?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Detmer, no, because Minnesota is one of those states that links its law to federal law at a specific point in time. If you wanted to conform, you would have to enact a law that does that.
Thank you.
Chair Detmer. Yeah. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loon. I was thinking about the chair's comments about how he isn't able to do everything that he wants because he never gets a big enough target. And that's true everywhere and every finance division around here. And what strikes me on these proposals is that we have, you know, and this wanted to become basically $90-some million a year that we would forego, which most of the finance divisions around here would be really excited if they could ever think about those kind of numbers, to benefit 1,100 people a year out of our 5 million. And, you know, you work on education finance. I know you struggle to stretch every nickel you can there as well. But why do you really feel like these 1,100 people who die, who've been successful, who've had good lives, that their heirs, the real benefit is to their heirs or whoever they decide to give it to, it could be their next door neighbor or whatever, why do those people deserve it more than 6,000 families on the basic sliding fee waiting list that would like to go to work so they get a paycheck and pay taxes, or people who are would like to have smaller class sizes to improve our education outcomes? I mean, what I'm still struggling with the priority of such a small group getting such a big benefit. And if you could help me get my head around that, that would be helpful.
And just remember, Representative Law, for the 1,100 people, they only do it once.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Loeffler.
Actually, I think for some families that have accumulated wealth from generation to generation, it actually just repeats from generation to generation.
Was it Governor Huey Long that said, when I die, if I die? Yeah. Okay. Chair Loon.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the question, Representative Loeffler. And again, I think it's not just to the benefit of those 1,100 taxpayers or families that unfortunately have a death in their family. It is, I think, for those people, and many of which are small businesses, such as the one that Mr. Mogren's family operates and described. It is the prospect of keeping those businesses operating, the employment that they provide, and, again, the incentive for other small businesses to know that if they create start a business, create wealth in the state of Minnesota, that their heirs will not be penalized with a tax that they would not incur in other states if they were located elsewhere. And I think it's more of a forward-looking approach to how we encourage economic activity and keep it here in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that perspective. And I wonder if we have any information on what percent of this is actually dealing with someone who actually from scratch started a business as opposed to the person who picked the right stocks at the right time and they personally didn't contribute to the economy other than by making the right choice. And if we have any sense of that at all, I bet that's more information than we would have, but maybe revenue could help us with that.
Thank you. And Revenue will be talking on this issue. Representative Metza and then her.
And Mr. Chair?
Oh.
I'm sorry. If I could just make a quick response. Yes. And I don't know, and perhaps we'll have some information to shed more information or data on that and who specifically those taxpayers or heirs would be. But, again, I also want to make the point that, and Mr. Mogren touched on this as well, people with businesses with money, with resources, are also a huge base of support for nonprofits, for charities, for things going on in the state of Minnesota. And fewer taxpayers in the state with those kind of resources that are huge supporters of the arts, of nonprofits, of all manner within the state of Minnesota is another really important consideration.
Representative
Metza? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did just want to put one point of clarification to a comment you made. You can die twice, but you're only taxed once.
You know, it's really crazy. Thank you. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Loon and members. You might remember that last session we had a floor debate in session about the estate tax, and an Iron Range legislator had suggested that more people had been to the moon than have paid the estate tax. And last September, I met Charlie Duke, spent the evening with him, and Charlie Duke is the 10th man who walked on the moon. And so the frequency is a little bit more than you might think. But to Representative Loeffler's point, I think what we ought to be doing with the estate tax is be signaling to our college graduates and the people that we're paying to educate here in Minnesota and want to retain them and keep them here for the great jobs that we seem to understand that we need this talented workforce to grow Minnesota's economy. College graduates today really have a lot of decisions to make when they graduate. We can help pay for their education here in Minnesota, but if I were a college grad, you know, I'd be looking at where am I going to spend the next 40 years building my career and building my wealth and taking care of my family. That's what we go to school for. That's what we go to get an education, to learn how to take care of ourselves. And you can choose to stay here in Minnesota and be subjected to the maximum highest, the second highest tax rate in the nation as your individual income tax. You have to look at it at a long term in terms of building that wealth, maybe building a business, creating jobs. We ought to be creating every incentive to allow people to stay here and allow this growth in business and enterprise to continue snowballing into becoming another Fortune 500 company. We had a different tax environment when the Fortune 500 companies we like to brag about that started in Minnesota, I don't believe that they could start up and exist in an environment that we have today. So this is an important thing when you take a good high-paying job at maybe $100,000 a year, if you're paying the maximum income tax rate compared to a no-tax or low-tax state, that's a significant amount of money over years, and particularly if it's building a business, allowing it to stay here is really an important thing. And the business community, I'm sure, certainly shares that point of view. And we ought to be doing everything we can do to create jobs. As somebody else mentioned, 80% of job growth in Minnesota is with small businesses. And I guess even I wanted to take a stab at the capital gains thing that was mentioned earlier. The capital gains tax rate, the comparison isn't really quite right because when you have an asset and over the long term, what the capital gains preferential tax treatment is attempting to do is recognize the fact that inflation has created a lot of that wealth. And if you were to simply want to take that piece of property and dispose of it and reacquire it without doing a tax-deferred exchange, there's a significant amount of taxes that you're going to pay. So it really doesn't accomplish the end that it's talked about. And so those are my points. Thank you, sir.
As your humble chair, well, as your chair, I'm looking at the clock. We will be done at noon. I believe we have this room for after session today. We have a lot of people who need to testify. I've got a long list of members. And, of course, I'm not one that likes to cut off debate in any way. But just keep that in mind that I think I understood that we have this room for after session today. So, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think also a lot of discussion we have today has been around equity and fairness and about how we treat everything and everybody equally. And Chair, you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but the question isn't about whether or not we ought to be charging the estate tax $1,100. The question is, aren't there 5 million people that are not getting charged this? And if it was such a great thing for some, why wouldn't we charge the estate tax to everybody? Now, it's the whole point is that when you die, you have – it's not your choice, for one, at least in most cases. And second of all, it eliminates your ability to continue to grow revenue and income for yourself. It stops at that point. Those other people that make decisions on selling their assets and rebuilding in another location, whatever, that's still their choice, and they can still do that. And it's generally income that's produced. But we already give this exemption to 5 million. The question is, why would we want to then charge a minority number of people? Is that really the fair way of going about it? So unless I'm wrong, I think 5 million people already get this exemption, and seems inappropriate to single out a small group for it. Thank you.
Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't necessarily disagree that the level needs to increase, but I just wanted to ask you something that you mentioned struck me. You said something about how people with large estates are huge contributors to the nonprofit and charitable communities. Do you have any evidence to suggest that if the estate tax were eliminated completely, that would lead to more charitable giving? Because this may be a cynical statement, but it seems to me that many people give to charities to reduce their tax burden, and they wouldn't have any incentive to do so in the estate tax case if it were eliminated. So can you just enlighten me on that, if you could?
That was very cynical. I give from a joyful heart, not for a tax deduction. I didn't say that. I give for a tax deduction, too. Chair Lumen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Applebaum, thanks. And I think my reference to the charitable giving in that was last year the committee heard from sort of a survey that Twin Cities Business Magazine did, and we have also heard testimony and discussion before this committee about people, snowbirds in particular, or people moving residency within Minnesota, and some of the audits that were being done of people to establish whether or not they were indeed residents of another state or Minnesota, if they had, maybe a home here or still some interest here. And one of the things that was being examined by the Department of Revenue was charitable contributions to Minnesota charities or nonprofits, and that was being used against taxpayers, saying, perhaps you're not domiciled in, let's say, Florida, for example, versus Minnesota. So all of those things are factors when you look at whether or not you have a tax policy that may encourage people to relocate their state of residency and to make decisions based upon the tax codes that we have to lessen their tax burden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, no more questions. I just wanted to say I appreciate evidence, and I have a study done by the Urban Institute a couple years back that projects that if the estate tax were eliminated completely, anywhere from $3.5 to $6 billion less of charitable giving would occur in the United States. And so I'll distribute that to everyone via email, but I just think we should try to get a better understanding on what's really going on and the consequences for eliminating it completely or raising the limits or whatever this committee decides to do. So thank you for your bill. Appreciate learning more about it.
Thank you, Representative Applebaum. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my final comment for the day, not for the session. But
I'm writing that down.
On this topic, I just have to respond to the previous information about the 1100, okay? The heirs of the 1100, when they received this, and again, you got to grow capital in the private sector to grow the economic base to create more tax revenue. So the heirs, they might be the next one that starts a Medtronic in the state, that starts a 3M in the state, okay? Or indirectly invest in stocks and bonds. When you buy into stocks and bonds, you give companies money to grow their business. And when they grow their business and hire additional employees, it generates more tax revenue. You don't want to tax and penalize the accumulation of capital and wealth. You want to free it up so that it will bring about additional tax revenues in the future, even greater than what we have now, so we can take care of our low-income people, take care of our schools, and take care of our health, low-income health needs, all right? And you say, rather than have people live on government subsistence at a low level, we can actually, by allowing people with money to grow their business and pay them higher wages, they can have hope for a future for themselves and their children. These are negative economic taxes. They should be completely eliminated, which is one of the reasons I'm a co-author on Representative McDonald's bill. But anyway, Representative Loeffler, if you respond to my comment, I'd appreciate it if you mentioned my name. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler, if you have a comment, your name is mentioned, please do not say Grunhagen.
I will.
will, that's a bigger debate that I'm not going to engage in at this point, given the time.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your consideration. Okay, of the folks on the list, Ms. Madden, Brian Rice, Mr. Nelson, Ms. Cadoon, Mr. Hickey, Todd. I guess the only one I don't know, where's Todd? Where do you live?
I live in Falconbank. I live in Shoreview, work in Falconbank.
Okay, so my rule is I would get you on real quick here if you live more than 50 miles, but it looks like a bunch of roadies and groupies here. So, Chair Marquardt. Yep.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I first of all want to thank you for continuing the tradition of hearing a Democratic bill first, as you did this year, and actually the debate for the estate tax. And, you know, this really is a bipartisan issue. We've had Democrats and Republicans propose bills to, you know, modify it, eliminate it, whatever. And, in fact, you know, I would like to see what even the cost would be if you just looked at the farmland, just that portion of it, because if you've got a section of land with the current market prices and equipment, you get the $5 million in a hurry. So even just kind of parceling out that. But having said that, is that even if you were to eliminate the entire estate tax with the Representative McDonald's bill, it's about 0.7 of 1% of our total revenues. And when you're looking at, if you were to eliminate all, you would help about 1,100 folks. And actually, Representative Loon's bill and Representative Fisher would actually help less than that. So in the whole big scheme of things, we're not talking about a huge deal, even though I understand the impact on those that it does affect. So it really comes down to a philosophical debate, which is what we're hearing here, and we're not going to really settle anything. And Mr. Chair, you mentioned a few minutes ago, it is a matter of priorities and the amount of dollars. And let's face it, you know, if you look into 18 and 19 budget, you take the structural balance, it's not the $1.4 billion in Chair Knobloch, and it's probably about $750 million of actually structural dollars. So even if you were to all shake things out and get a tax bill that maybe would be $400, let's say half of that, you've got to look at the priorities. And, you know, when I look at the priorities, I'm going to put the owners of the $1.3 million homes and the 75,000 farms and the 503,000 small business owners who have seen property taxes go up over $700 million the last 2 years. That's going to be a bigger priority for me and I think for this committee. And when you look at trying to provide some Social Security relief for the 600,000 seniors out there, I think is going to be a bigger priority. Or trying to do the military service credit to the 361,000 veterans, not all of them, of course, qualifying, but how you lower taxes for those certainly has to be a higher priority. In last year's tax bill, we had $100 million for about the 340,000 filers who do the working family credit, those hardworking families trying to make ends meet. And you had about $75 million, Mr. Chair, in that really good tax bill last year that dealt with student loan forgiveness. And 70% of our students who graduate from college, in the most recent year they had the data, 70% have student debt in Minnesota to the tune of about $31,000 a person. That's the fifth highest in the nation. So you add up those that I think are higher priorities, not to diminish the impact on those folks who are paying the estate tax. But we're talking about millions of people who are seeing burdensome obstacles and so forth, whether that's property taxes or other things that I think we need to really deal with. And just some of those things I added up is almost $400 million. And so, yeah, in the best worlds, could we do all the, you know, $306 million for Representative McDonald's bill? I mean, you know, we could sit and talk about this quite a bit today, and I know we've got a number of testifiers coming, but I think the reality is, think about it. I mean, what are our priorities? And if you really think that these 1,100 folks is your top priority, then we're going to spend $100 million on that. Otherwise, we're going to spend $100 million in the property tax relief area or Social Security or student loan debt or working family credit or other things. And so that's where I'm at with this is that, I mean, these bills are all good bills, but we can't afford them. There should not be our top priority with all the other things we have. So I guess we're going to have a lot of other folks coming up here, and just kind of in that context, think about, you know, I don't know how big of a tax bill, probably a bigger one out of the House than what we might end up with, but it's, you know, it's not going to be over $500 million probably into the, well, I won't say Mr. You're Chair, but, you know, we are going to be very limited. And I would like to know if there's any way we can parcel out what an increase on just the farm exclusion would be on that. You know, I know it's $5 million for qualifying farm homesteads, I think, or whatever, but what if you were to ratchet that up, what would be the cost?
Chair Mark, are you saying maybe take some of the restrictions off the farm piece?
Yeah, I'd just like to know the numbers, Mr. Chair, and just even what that would be, because in this day and age when you've got market values going $6,000-$7,000 an acre, it just adds up in a hurry.
Right. Interesting question. Do you have any, Mr. Michael, any thoughts on that? If we took the three-year forward off of there as far as ownership?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know about, we'd have to ask the Department of Revenue to sort of estimate what various options on that would cost if you were going to raise that $5 million cap or loosen up the rules a little bit.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. We'll wrap it up with Chair Knobloch, then we're going to move on. Chair Knobloch.
Well, just I had a real quick point to what Representative Applebaum brought up in terms of talking about charities. And I don't think he meant this comment, but he made some sort of comment about people giving to charities so they can get the deduction. And I think everyone on this committee understands that a deduction only reduces the cost of the charitable gift. So if you give $1,000, even if you're in the maximum state income tax bracket that's close to 10%, even if you're in the maximum federal bracket that's close to 40%, if you give $1,000, it's still costing you $500-some. I mean, no one in their right mind should be giving money to charity because they think they're going to be gaining tax benefits. It's still going to cost them money. They're not giving money to charity because they want the tax benefit. They're giving money to charity because they believe in that charity and they want to give their personal wealth to something that they believe in. And the tax benefit reduces the cost of that gift, but it still does cost the money. And I think the same thing applies to the estate tax as you look at the deductions to the estate tax that are available for charitable giving. And I just think that sometimes, and maybe I think everyone on the tax committee knows this or should know this, but for people in the audience and anyone else listening, just people need to understand that if you give to charity, it's still costing you money. It's just a somewhat reduced cost because of the tax deduction we have for it.
And, Chair, now look at my tax bracket, it's quite substantial. The name was mentioned, Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knobloch, I said that giving to charity is done in many cases simply to reduce that person's tax burden, which you confirmed in your statement. So I have no further questions and don't really care to debate you on why people give or how much. So,
excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Applebaum, it does not reduce their tax burden. If you give $1,000, even if you're in the maximum tax bracket, it's still going to cost you at least $500 more than if you didn't give any money at all. It doesn't reduce the amount of money that you have by the fact that you have a tax deduction.
You didn't say Applebaum, did you?
No.
Okay, let's move on. Item next, Representative McDonald. Very briefly, and then we... Chair Loon renews her motion that House File 18 be considered for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Loon, for your extremely controversial bill. Representative McDonald moves House File 85.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if there's any...
Very brief, because we're going to get into...
Yeah, very briefly.
I think we know what your bill does.
You know what it does. Good. If there's any empirical data that suggests the estate tax causes people to move, that data can be found in this committee in the last 3 years because it causes legislators from each side of the aisle to move fast as they can to get up to this testifying table to repeal or reduce or conform with a federal estate tax. So, yes, it does. There is empirical data that it caused the estate tax causes people to move right here in this room and in particular in Wright County in Howard Lake, at the Howard Lake Farm Supply Store when I was purchasing some rebar, putting up signs, family member who said that their family farm had to be sold because the parents died,
The farm was given to the children, and they simply didn't have the resources or the revenue to keep the farm. So for 100 years, this farm, this land that they sweat, toiled, and produced great crops had to be sold because the children simply couldn't afford it. I don't need any other evidence that this tax is a bad tax and an unfair tax, personally. That's all I need to know. And then from that, many others in my district have shared that they are too are in the same boat and possibly could lose their family farm. So for those who are moving out of state, there's great wealth. There is some evidence. Peter Nelson will be down here to share some of that. Four people alone in Delano. It's a small town. It's only 5,464 people have moved out of Minnesota. 6 months and one day. They're out of there. Well, they could put up with the cold. They're not wussies. We here in Minnesota are pretty tough. They moved out because they can save their families and their generations of families a lot of money from the government extracting and through coercion and taking it from the death tax, the estate tax. So our witnesses will give you some data to indicate some of the people that do move. But I just want you to think about quickly, and I'll end, and I'm not also going to give my poem, my tax poem. Recall some of you, I recited that 2 years ago.
Thank goodness.
Thanks a lot, Representative. But you will see and hear some testimony that this estate tax does cause people to move, and with it, great monies that go to charity, go to their banks, go to photographers, go to the grocery stores, go to the state, and so on and so forth. So with that, I'd like to call my first witness.
No, you don't get to do that.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for members? Seeing none, I will call the first witness. Okay. Thank you, Vice Chair McDonald. So I will move, or Representative McDonald moves House File 85 at this point, so I guess I already did that. Okay. Let's go to my good friend, Nan Madden from the Minnesota Budget Project, and Brian Rice, if you two could, and you're my good friend too, Brian, if you could both come down to the table. Let's get another chair there, maybe. Grab a chair there, another chair. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. The Minnesota Budget Project identifies and promotes public policies to expand opportunity and economic security to all Minnesotans.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to express some concerns with the bills before you today to repeal or significantly cut the estate tax. Our primary concerns are, first, that the cost of these bills will crowd out other priorities, and that these bills would create an uneven playing field among Minnesota taxpayers. So the first concern is the cost of these bills, which do grow over time. They vary among the different bills, but if we look out into the next biennium, it's a cost of $150 million to nearly $350 million when you look across the three bills. This committee and the various budget committees of the legislature will be making important tax and budget choices this session. And I do question whether repealing or dramatically cutting the estate tax for a small number of the largest estates should take priority over other choices you could make that would have a greater impact on Minnesotans across the state, such as sustainably funding services for the elderly and people with disabilities, making child care and a college education more affordable, or in this committee, passing a more broadly based tax cut. A second concern is that the estate tax plays an important role in providing a level playing field among taxpayers. This is because the estate tax serves as a backstop to the income tax and applies to the increased value of assets, such as stocks that are held in large estates that otherwise would not be taxed. And these bills would eliminate or greatly weaken this backstop. The more we erode the estate tax, the more that unrealized capital gains held in large estates will go entirely untaxed. Those who have the means to hold on to appreciated assets through their lifetimes will not pay taxes on those gains, and that is a benefit that not other taxpayers have. Research on estates nationally finds that unrealized capital gains make up a large portion of the assets in estates, and especially the largest estates. unrealized capital gains, and these are national figures, make up about one-third of the estates worth between $5 and $10 million and are 55% of the value of estates worth more than $100 million. And finally, I'd like to address the argument that these cuts are needed in response to fears of tax migration. And certainly there are anecdotes and stories that is something that, that does happen. People do take a look at taxes when they decide on where to live, but the body of research suggests that the impact of estate tax policies is relatively modest. It's not a large enough factor that we think it should be the primary concern driving our tax policy. Research that has looked at a number of taxes that exist at the state level that affect seniors, so not only the estate tax but also Social Security and tax issues related to pensions, finds that migration patterns among the states have been fairly consistent over the years, even as states have varied more and more on their policy choices related to taxation relation in relation to seniors. The research also indicates that the revenue gained by potentially keeping a small number of households from moving is smaller than the amount of revenue lost from eliminating or substantially cutting the estate tax. So, in other words, estate tax cuts don't pay for themselves. So, in conclusion, I ask you to consider whether a tax cut of the size of the bills suggested today for a small number of the largest estates, and which would create an uneven tax treatment among taxpayers, should take the priority over other choices that you could make that would have a larger impact on Minnesotans across the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden. Mr. Rice, and then we'll go into member questions for both of you, if that's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Rice. My name is Brian Rice. I'm here today representing AFSCME Council 5. It's a union of 43,000 state and local government workers that believe in economic fairness for not only themselves but for all Minnesotans. AFSCME Council 5 does have concerns with these bills. We've testified with great concern in the past. I think the committee's had a very good discussion. I just want to make a couple points. First, the issue of the estate tax. I mean, estate tax has been around in this country in some form or another since the 18th century. More recently, the federal estate tax has been in existence since 1916. And as Representative Loon testified, Minnesota is one of 14 states that does have it. But it's an important mix. It's less than 1% of our overall revenue collection, but it's more than the liquor gross receipts tax. It's more than the motor vehicle rental tax. It's more than the alcoholic beverage tax. It's more than the tobacco products taxes. It's more than the mortgage registry deed taxes or the deed transfer tax. And it's more than the solid waste tax, coming in at roughly $175 million. So while you can say it's small, it's a pretty important part of the mix. And, you know, several years ago when Governor Dayton first pushed the idea of the three-legged stool, I think Commissioner Franz was talking about, let's make these equal. You know, in fact, at the end of the day, the stool isn't so equal anymore because income tax, individual income tax, is closing in on 50% of all receipts. And if you eliminate this tax, it unbalances that system even more. We think another important part of this estate tax is that it's the most progressive tax that you have of all the taxes in the state. On the Suits Index, it's almost a plus one. I think it's 0.862. So it's the most progressive tax. If you eliminate it, as Representative McDonald proposes, our system of taxation, which is already regressive, becomes 15% more regressive. So this tax gets at a group of people, albeit small, and a group of estates that has accumulated a lot of wealth, and that's a good thing for their efforts. But that accumulation of wealth, I think, is a national concern, not only in terms of income but in terms of assets. We've reached probably a point where fewer people are having more than we've had in well over 100 years, and we think that's a societal concern and one that you as tax policymakers should really be concerned about. And do you keep having this enormous concentration of wealth and fewer families and individuals? This is a modest means to address that, but it's also an important part of your tax strategy, I would submit, if you're concerned about progressivity and income tax and issues like that. And not only is it this tax larger than about 7 or 8 major taxes, which you're going to spend a lot of time talking about in session, to put it in perspective, as Nan said, if you did the McDonald bill, that's about $350 million in the out bienniums a year, $300 million next biennium. The Loon version or the Fisher version is about half of that to just go up to federal conformance, which I think there's some strong policy arguments about why you might want to do it, but the total elimination would take away $350 million. But the general fund spending in transportation is less than that amount at about $240 million. The jobs and economic development, all of that spending is $390 million. Environment and agriculture is about $400 million. And capital bonding is $250 million. So you have an enormous responsibility, Mr. Chairman, as the tax chair, about how do you fund this big enterprise along with Representative Knobloch. And this is an important part of that. And I think it does come down to priorities, how you would do it. And we think that this estate tax does play an important role in creating a more progressive, more fair tax system. And I guess if AFSCME Council 5 had a vote on, we would urge members to keep it in the main, whether or not for other policy considerations you may look to matching it with the federal government. I guess that's within your jurisdiction. So thank you very much for the time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I think what we're going to do is we're going to hear from the testifiers, and then I'm going to keep a list of folk members that have questions that we can come in after session for. Okay. With that being said, let's go to Mr. Cook. Oh, you're on the Koch brothers.
No, I'm not.
Don't you wish you were?
Okay.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir. And before we get going here, I have a list of Mr. Koch, and then I've got Kadoon, Hickey, Nelson. Is there anyone else in the audience who has traveled from some distance who wish to testify in the audience, from the audience? Okay. Mr. Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Todd Koch. I am a CPA who practices in Falcon Heights, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Society of Certified Public Accountants. I appreciate you taking some time to look at the estate tax. You've addressed a lot of the policy areas, but I want to talk some of the practical things that we deal with day in and day out. The firm I work for has been around for 90 years. We have a fourth-generation owner. So as such, unfortunately, we have to deal with a lot of estates because our clients we have older clients, and they tend to die over time. And one of the things to take a look at is in the old days, back when everything was linked together, the federal rules followed the state rules, there were some other things that happened because of that linking together. Things that would happen is there's federal elections that would also apply to the state that are no longer allowed if you have a Minnesota-only estate return. For example, everyone talks about step-up on basis, and if your estate is at $3 million and all of a sudden the value of your assets drop, there's a big change in the stock market or whatever, and it drops to $2.5 million 6 months later. There's a federal rule that says you could look at the value 6 months later, and if your tax is less, you can use the lower values. Well, your federal tax does not change if you're not having to file a federal return with federal tax on it. So you have to use the higher value. You don't have that choice to use the lower value later. There was one of the bigger things that has to do with this, there's a concept now called portability. And I could talk about myself in that concept. Is not that I'm an overly controlling person, but as a small business owner myself, my net worth is my small business and my retirement account. That is my net worth financially. My wife can't own my business due to state licensing laws. My wife cannot own my retirement account because it's based upon my dollars. So if my wife dies first, her exclusion dies with her. And but if I die first, my wife gets two exclusions. She gets to use mine, and then when she dies, she gets to use hers. Because you set things up right, you end up with two exclusions without going into the details. But my wife would die first because the financial assets have to be in my name. My tax goes up. My kid's tax, okay? It's really goes up just because of the order of way somebody dies. For federal purposes, there's a way to take care of this called portability that says that if you didn't use your exclusion, you pass it along to your spouse. Because we have disjointed systems, we don't have that type of a system. So it'd be nice if the systems were linked together if we have a system, so we could take care of some of these things that just happen just because we have linked systems. One of the other things that makes a big difference is to file a Minnesota-only return, a return that's, you know, that is between the, if you allow me to round, the $5.5 million and the $1.8 million today. You have to do a complete federal return. And although the federal estate return is a very logical return, it's the most logical, organized return that our tax system has. It is a pain in the butt to complete. Because imagine you folks having to do if I brought a puzzle to you, and that puzzle has the puzzle pieces you need in there, or by the way, they throw some other stuff in there too you don't need, and you don't have the cover, and we're being asked to put together the puzzle. That's what an estate return is. You have a lot of the data you need. You get extraneous stuff you don't need. And the person that has all the answers to complete the return is dead. You can't ask them. It's a very complex and convoluted system to pull together. And to have people with these lower estates, it is very costly for them to comply with these rules. At our office,
I'm watching the clock here. How much?
It's at least $15,000 to complete a return. That's our minimum fee now because of these complexities to the process that I'm talking about. So if you're filing a Minnesota return and I'm charging them $15,000, not because I'm greedy, not because I'm outlandish, it's because of all the difficulties you're dealing with to gather all the data, to figure out the data you don't have, because you can't ask questions of a person who's no longer around, and the family is stressed out due to the death. It is really difficult, arduous process. And I can tell you the fee that I charge is not on the high end of the scale of what you will see from other providers either.
Mr. Koch, how much time do you need?
I could probably get that in 5 minutes really fast.
Three?
We'll keep going.
The three plan.
I will try to do that. Keep in mind that the difference between a $2 and $5 million exemption is $300,000. I just tell my clients it's the difference between buying the house next door if you move across the river into Wisconsin or North Dakota. When you put it in terms like that, people think about it. You will not see the direct empirical evidence you're looking for because this is a part of a process. It is not a one event. But the more things you add on, that's when my clients move and they have bigger events. It is part. It's not the one and only things to look at. The other reason that you'll see estates increasing dramatically is my father was a teacher. I'm a small business owner. A teacher's retirement is not on their balance sheet. It's a promise. And they get a monthly payment on that promise. I am required to save for my retirement, and that is on my balance sheet. So when my dad died at 65, he had no dollars sitting for his promise to fund those payments. If I die today, would have dollars sitting in as a promise. So by moving the exemption up, you're helping create an exemption for people who are doing what you want them to do, to save for the retirement and not be a burden on the society. This is a tax that people look at as a bad tax. As such, it's one of the things that people look at when they're deciding whether or not to stay or not. And I appreciate you taking the time to look at it and all its different derivations. There's one thing I just want to point out that the committee hasn't talked about, and that there is one of the estate tax things that turns out to be very poorly received and is, to be honest, in my opinion, the most unfair is if you own property in a partnership or an S corporation. If it's if you're a non-resident, it's deemed that you own the property in Minnesota. If you're a Minnesota resident and that property is outside the state of Minnesota, it's not looked at the same. It's looked at that you own an intangible asset. So if you're a Minnesota resident, you pay tax on everything, even if the property is owned outside. If you're a non-Minnesota resident, we look through and tax you on that proportion of the property that's inside. That just seems inequitable. The equation should work both ways, one way or the other, please. Hopefully I kept it under my 3 minutes.
Close enough for government work. Thanks, Mr. Cope. Thank you. Let's go to Ms. Cadoon. And then I have Mr. Hickey and Mr. Nelson, then the department. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. We're here in strong support of the federal bills in front of you today. I want to be very brief. We did have a handout that you should have in your packets, hopefully, and I'll just focus on the back page, which has the map. Since I last spoke to the committee, there has been other actions that have occurred at other states. So Minnesota is becoming, let's be clear, more and more of a tax outlier in this area. New Jersey this fall recently is removing their tax, federal, the estate tax as of 2018. So Minnesota will be one of 13 states plus D.C. that still has a federal or still has the estate tax. And then other states, even under Democrat governors, are also moving to increase the ones that have it to that federal threshold. So as was mentioned, a lot of times it's also the combination of our estate tax plus, unfortunately, our individual income tax. And as mentioned, it tends to be a variety of factors that folks look at when they're making these decisions on whether to invest in Minnesota, whether to relocate from Minnesota. So I just want to focus on, if you're looking at that map, that shows for the individual income tax, as I mentioned, Minnesota is actually third highest in the nation now. Hawaii had a temporary higher tax, and we're now higher than Hawaii. But if you look at the top five individual income tax states, which are California, Oregon, Minnesota, Iowa, and New Jersey, three of those states do not have an estate tax. California does not, Iowa, and New Jersey now will have repealed theirs. Oregon does have an estate tax and a high income tax. However, they do not have a sales tax. So Minnesota kind of stands alone in those top five individual income tax, where we have both the estate tax, a high income tax, and all the other major taxes. If you're looking at this map as well, just to highlight a couple states, on the West Coast, Washington does not have an income tax. The state closest to us, Illinois, their top income tax rate of 3.75 is actually lower than our lowest income tax rate. New York, once again, now we're higher than New York on our individual income tax state as well, and they're at the federal threshold. So as I mentioned, other states have made moves. Other governors and legislators have seen that this is really a strong financial incentive put in place unfortunately, for more affluent of their residents to move outside of the state. We think you should move that incentive. We want to make sure we're attracting and keeping wealthy individuals, as well as making it easier for our small businesses to be able to pass along their enterprises. Thank you.
Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. We represent 11,000 small businesses and farms, and many of them are family-held and probably are the most affected group of this proposal based on the large numbers we have. I'm starting to sound like a Hickey one note, Mr. Chairman, but thanks again for raising these important issues, having a state tax day yet again in this committee, and for your dedication to this issue and what you advanced in the 2015 session. So we're at it again. Representative Loeffler, you raised a really interesting question, and I had not heard that 1,100 person stat, but here's the other side of that. Is she here? Here's the other side of it. We represent a lot of family-held businesses that are spending a tremendous amount of money buying excessive life insurance and setting up trusts that people are going to be maybe just a little above the $5 or $10 million threshold should not have to be doing. We're not talking about the Vanderbilts or the Rockefellers or, ironically, the Kennedys here. We're talking about people who are just a little bit above that threshold, and they're spending a lot of money playing a lot of defense out of fear of what happens on that day. And Representative McDonald ran into a personal anecdote, and that's pretty moving when you hear about that. I ran into one at a meeting the other day. And so they're spending that out of fear. Maybe that's good for some insurance agents or some attorneys, but it's wasteful spending, really, in total. And it could be going into those businesses and helping people. And so that's the side of it where people are spending a lot of money out of fear and playing defense. We need to do this to really help family, help businesses and farms. And finally, hopefully this will finally be the year with yet another large budget surplus that we can finally conform to the federal. So if you don't have a federal tax issue, you don't have a state, and that'd be a tremendous accomplishment.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hickey. The only thing that I would like stricken from the record is when you said excessive life insurance and wasteful spending. There is no such thing. You can never. I've taken out hundreds of death checks, and I've never had a family say, "Greg, you brought us too much money." I've never had that. So. Strike that from the record, please. But otherwise,
Chairman, I spent above and beyond what your normal needs would be. And
fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Okay, we'll now go to Mr. Nelson, and then I think we can. And then I think what we'll do, Mr. Cummings, is we're going to be done like at noon here, and so the first thing we do at our next meeting will be hearing from the department. You'll have full time to hear from the department on these three bills. So we're not cutting anybody off. That will get us. Otherwise, I'll have to blame you for having to come back in after session. Okay, is that okay?
Perfect.
Okay, yep, he's with us. He's with the team here. Okay, you've got 5 minutes.
All right, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll try to get through this quickly. When I look at the estate tax, I find that the estate tax is possibly the most unprincipled tax that we have on the books. When you look at the principles of sound tax policy, which our Department of Revenue released in a report in 2011 that was written by a number of different economists from all ideological perspectives, they listed these three principles. Principle of simplicity, we want our tax code to be simple so it's transparent and easy to enforce. We've already heard testimony on how complex this is. I don't need to get into that. We want to treat equals equally. We want similarly situated people treated similarly. We've already seen how people who have S corporations who live here are treated different than people who don't live here. And we've already seen how people who have farms here and apartments and other facilities have to, you know, really don't have no ability to escape this tax. Whereas if you just have stocks and bonds and those sorts of things, you can escape this tax by moving. So it really violates those two principles. But the biggest principle it violates is economic efficiency. This is what the report from the Department of Revenue talked about when they talked about economic efficiency. They stated, allocating economic resources toward their most productive use is perhaps the chief advantage of free markets. This allocative efficiency is, in effect, a way of making the economic pie as large as possible. One goal of a successful tax system is to interfere as little as possible with this process. A mark of effective tax policy, therefore, is the preservation of incentives for individuals and businesses to make decisions on the basis of productivity rather than for pure tax benefit. So in other words, Minnesota taxes should minimize distortions on economic decisions in order to create the largest economic pie possible for Minnesota. This is about creating the largest economic pie possible for all of Minnesotans. This isn't about those 1,100 people. This is about all of Minnesota and making sure that we have a strong economy moving forward. This tax, though, is a very high rate on a very narrow base. And so it actually has an outsized impact on our economy based on the small amount of revenue that it brings in, because it creates this incredible incentive to distort your behavior to avoid the tax. And there's all sorts of things that people do when it comes to dissolving their business or selling their business or passing making lifetime transfers, all sorts of things people do to avoid this tax. I want to quickly run to the issue I think that all of us want to talk about is whether people do leave the state. And the fact is people do leave the state. And to Representative Schultz's question about the empirical evidence, I would like to direct your attention to, you all have this report in your packets to page 4 here. There's a page that says, that's titled, A Dearth of Data and Research on Wealth Migration. We really don't have a lot of good empirical data to prove whether people are leaving the state or not due to the estate tax, because we don't measure wealth. There's very little data measuring the wealth of citizens by state, and so it's hard to track state-to-state movement. And even when you look at a proxy of wealth, income, there is also very little data on income movement from state to state, because we have to rely on census data, and there's limits to that. And so, because the sample size is so small. So we have to look at other data. We really have to look at a lot of other data out there. And when you do look at a lot of this other data, it all points to the fact that, guess what, people do make different decisions based on taxes. When you look at the federal collections of income taxes on estates and trusts, Minnesota in 2015 collected about $7,500 per estate. And in South Dakota, it was different. It was a very different number. South Dakota per return collections was $72,482. Obviously, people have changed their behavior because South Dakota does not tax those estates and trusts. And that's why we have almost 10 times higher collections per return in South Dakota.
Okay. Mr. Nelson, yes. I think we're going to stop there. I know we're going to stop there.
All right.
So members, normally I like to have members be able to ask questions of everyone, but if you have a question of Mr. Nelson, Stryden, Hickey, or Koch, please give them a call, and we will start. No, I'm going to change one thing for the department here, Mr. Cummings. We're going to do introductions first. We missed that again today. So introductions, then the department on these three bills. And so, members, if you have questions of Nelson, Cadoon, Hickey, Koch, Madden, or Rice, ask them. They are around. We will finish with Representative Schultz very, very briefly, since her name was mentioned. And testifiers, please don't mention names anymore. And members. Representative Schultz. Briefly.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. So I just have one question. Do you agree with the chair and Representative McDonald that there is reliable empirical evidence that shows Minnesotans are moving because of the estate tax?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I believe there's reliable data that creates strong evidence that shows that people leave the state of Minnesota due to our estate tax and our income taxes. When you talk about empirical evidence, we're talking about economic data that is about, that uses regression analysis and econometrics to basically say this is specifically why people leave, and we don't have, that data doesn't exist.
Okay.
So we have to rely on other evidence.
Your second last question.
Thank you. So I just want to read, this is a quote from your paper you distributed from your article. You say, so do people move to avoid Minnesota's estate tax? Unfortunately, there's no reliable empirical research available to answer the question.
I think it's a loophole. And with that, Representative McDonald moves House File 85 be delivered for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, members. Sorry to cut anybody short, but that's the way it goes sometimes. And we will not be coming in after session unless, well, we're not going to. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.